I want somebody to come out and create a bug scanner. Go tell me all the bugs that are in the software that I have. Like, not the security issues, but the bugs. Because that list is going to be way longer. And I guarantee you that some of those bugs are far more impactful for you as a user than some of these security issues.
Welcome to What's in the Sauce. I'm your host, Omkar Arasaratnam. And with me this week, we have fellow Canadian Vincent Dayton. Vincent, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Omkar. How are you?
I'm doing just dandy. So for our audience, would love to do a quick intro. Why don't you give him your name, title, and what you do?
Sure. So Vincent Dayton, Vice President of Product Security at Red Hat. I just actually celebrated 15 years at Red Hat a month ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Prior to that, I was at Mandriva, for those longtime listeners who know the history of Linux, doing security work for them for about 8 years. So I've been knee deep in open source security for over 20 years now, and it just makes me feel old.
You're an OG, as the kids say. And let me drop some street cred. You know, I used to be a Red Hat certified engineer in Red Hat 7.2, and I didn't say RHEL. I said Red Hat 7.2 because I'm an old guy too.
Yeah, well, you got some street cred for sure.
That's a really cool title. Sounds incredibly important. Can you give our listeners a bit of an overview as to, you know, being the person in charge of product security? What does that mean at Red Hat?
Yeah, I mean, product security at Red Hat, that name kind of gives it away, right? It is about the security of our products. Our remit is effectively all of the proactive, reactive security concerns around our portfolio of products. So if you think about it, that you'd mentioned RHEL, that's one, OpenShift, Ansible, middleware, you know, EAP, a ton of products. And of course, we like to support these things for a very long time. So multiple versions of the same product. So effectively, my team ingresses a number of vulnerability information. So new CVEs are discovered, either they're reported directly to us, either under embargo or not. We get information from CVE, other reporters. You're familiar with the Linux distros mailing list, so we get information that way as well. So we're kind of ingressing all of these vulnerabilities. We triage them and determine their effectiveness or affectedness to our products. And then we kind of go through the whole process of rating the vulnerability in terms of its severity, how it's impacting in the products, and then kind of just follow that through with engineering, who are going to fix these things and test them, release them out to our customers, provide a ton of information about CVEs because customers really like to know, what does this thing do? And should I be sweating, or should, you know, is this okay? We also focus a lot on, say, our internal build pipelines, how we curate the open source, how we, you know, interact with upstream. We do a lot on the compliance front as well. So it's like a very robust view of security from front to end for all of our products.
That sounds like an incredibly broad scope. And at some point, you have to tell the listeners when you have time to sleep. It sounds like you're on all the time, like most of us are in cybersecurity.
Yes, although I do sleep, and I actually sleep pretty good. One of the benefits of having a fantastic team to work with. So I don't have to worry about everything. I have a great team to work with, and they do a lot of the heavy lifting.
That's wonderful to hear. And I certainly get that. Back in the day, when I first started in cybersecurity, incident response was one of the things that I had. And an old manager of mine often said, whenever we have to deal with an incident, there should be a sense of urgency, but it shouldn't be panic. And what I'm hearing from you is you've got a team that's really set up to handle that sense of urgency properly without the panic that could be a negative force.
It's actually interesting that you mentioned that, because one of our goals is to, particularly with a lot of these named vulnerabilities, so those have been a phenomenon for at least the last dozen years. Because Heartbleed actually just celebrated a 10-year anniversary. I think it was earlier this week or last week.
Yeah, I didn't get a cake, but I remember.
I didn't get a cake either, but I do remember when it happened. I was hip deep in that as well. But one of our goals is to maybe quell that sense of panic that our customers or other people in the industry have. So we really try to take a look at these vulnerabilities from the perspective of, what does it actually do, and do I need to be worried? And then convey that information as clearly and concisely as possible to our customers so that we're not seeing undue panic. I mean, there are certain things we should absolutely be panicking about, right? Like, these are things where if we produce a patch, I mean, we want you to apply it as quickly as possible. There is that sense of urgency. But when we're looking and analyzing these things, I kind of think of it more akin to a firefighter. If you're in the middle of a blaze trying to put that fire out and you're panicking, you're not going to be very effective, right? So we want to be as kind of calm, cool, collected, measured, as clear as possible.
The analog that I use often to describe that same concept, a neighbor of mine is a paramedic. And one of the things he pointed out to me was, you'll notice that paramedics never run at an accident scene. And it's not, I mean, they certainly move with urgency, but they don't run because they don't want to cause more harm through acting in a non-stoic and measured manner by kind of running into the proverbial scene. Of course, we see that on TV all the time, but you know, TV is not reality. I do want to come back to the heartbleed thing for just a moment. It's said that when you look back on your life, there's certain key moments that everybody remembers. And for those that were maybe the generation prior to us, it was the JFK assassination. For our generation, to betray our age to the viewers or the listeners, it was probably the Challenger explosion. It was probably, you know, 9/11. I have that indelible kind of memory of heartbleed. And the reason I have that indelible memory is I have very poor discipline when it comes to turning off work. And I wish I had better discipline. My wife also wishes I had better discipline. But 10 years ago, I had promised my wife and kids we were going to go to Hawaii for the first time. We were in Maui, and this was still back in the days when everybody had a BlackBerry. I left my BlackBerry at home turned off, and we were on the beach in Maui, and I came back in and I turned on the TV and I was like, oh boy, what a day to be disconnected from work. What was your experience?
First, I'll say you were one of the lucky ones, right, to be disconnected from.
By total coincidence.
Yeah. No, the thing that sticks out for me the most, well, there's two. One is that our Red Hat Summit was about a month later, and that was all anyone wanted to talk about was heartbleed. And that's not what I was there for, right? So that was interesting, and that kind of sticks in my head. The other one was, I actually remember my mother phoning me, and she's completely, sorry, Mom, if you hear this, completely computer illiterate. Right. I have to go to her house to help her fix the remote because she did something to the TV.
Right.
It's literally one button.
Right.
But she phones me and she's like, hey, I heard about this computer thing on the radio. And I was like, what are you even talking about? A, you picked up on this.
Right.
And you knew it was somehow relevant to me, which was shocking. And then secondly, it was like, it was on the radio.
Right.
And to that point, I had never heard, like the local news, I had never heard of a security issue in software ever getting that kind of airplay. This thing was really noisy.
My family non-technical analog is my dad. And again, apologies to my dad if he hears this. Who, like, my dad wants to send me articles about, you know, the latest scam that's out there and, you know, don't get title scammed out of your house and stuff like that. And the odd meme. And not do much else. But when dad starts sending me stuff that's like, hey, do you know about this? Yeah, then it really puts things in perspective as to how this affects society. So I think the conclusion in all this that I'm drawing to is vulnerability management's hard to do properly. And being able to kind of filter signal and noise and get down to something that's actually actionable shouldn't be based on whether Vincent's mom hears it on the radio or Omkar's dad finds it on a news website. What are some key considerations for our listeners? What should they be thinking about when they start thinking about vulnerability management?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's something I think about a lot. And I actually talk about it a lot as well. The caveat here being, I work for Red Hat, and so this is my day job, right? And so I deal with a lot of customers who have a lot of questions, particularly about this topic, right? So the first thing that I would say is you have to know your vendor before you pick them. There is a fundamental trust factor that comes into play with your vendor. And I'm not even talking just from a security perspective, right? Like, you have to be able to trust the software that you're using or the vendor who puts it out, right? And there's a couple reasons for that. Vendors typically will assess a vulnerability themselves, right? I know we have things like NVD and OSV and like other kind of CVE aggregation systems, but a vendor typically rates the severity of a vulnerability in terms of their product. I've heard in the past, I haven't heard it recently, but somebody actually accused me of lowballing a vulnerability because I didn't want to have to fix it. And I was like, well, that's really weird. You know, right? You trust me to run your workloads, to do all this work that you're doing, build value in your business, right? To run your platforms and whatnot. But you're not going to trust me when I say that this vulnerability doesn't matter for these particular reasons, right? Which is a little weird. You trust me for one thing, but you don't trust me for
the other. It is strange.
So, I mean, there is a trust relationship with your vendor. And I think that extends to when they say something is impactful or not, you have to kind of believe that, right? It's really important because I was looking at a Grub vulnerability a couple months ago.
The bootloader?
Yeah, the bootloader. And when I was looking at the CVSS ratings for that Grub vulnerability, we had it rated one way. I think Debian had it rated a different way. SUSE rated it the same. F5 rated it like really low, right? In the context of their environment and how accessible it is, right? So, I mean, they rated it in the context of the way that they use it and kind of the environment around it. And that's typically what vendors do. So I wouldn't sit there and say, yeah, go look at, you know, how Debian rates stuff, and that's exactly how it works for Red Hat, because it's not true.
And presumably there may be some, I mean, it could be mitigations in your build chain that you include. It could be, to your point, is this an appliance? And is this something that's a materially accessible vulnerability remotely or something of that nature based on your usage?
100%. RHEL being an operating system, and you can do whatever you want with it. We don't know. OpenShift is more of an appliance platform, and it's built a very specific way, and there's a limited amount that you can do with it, right? In terms of how you're messing around with the different components. The same component might be present in both. In RHEL, I can use it however I want. I can use it as part of my own application. I can use it on the system, whatever. In OpenShift, that might be one very specific piece of plumbing with one very specific use that's either the vulnerable code isn't being used, or there's literally no way for a user or an attacker to access it. So the fact that the vulnerability is there, I mean, okay, yes, technically it's there, but in any possible use of OpenShift, it's not going to be material. You'd have to break OpenShift really, really bad in order to even access it, and then you've got bigger problems.
Absolutely. So the notion of reachability or exploitability is obviously key and a huge part of how people should be triaging these vulnerabilities as they do come up. What are some other pitfalls that people should avoid in vulnerability management?
Well, I think one of them is just the notion that, you know, as we were discussing here, that every vulnerability matters, right? Most of them don't. So I kind of look at it as like, don't sweat the fact that your scanner is showing up a bunch of low or medium or moderate vulnerabilities. That's probably fine, right? I would worry more about the critical and important or high vulnerabilities that it's showing, because those are the ones that are more likely to be exploited and are more likely to be damaging if they are. Interestingly enough, Red Hat produces a risk report on an annual basis. Last year, out of the about 1,600 vulnerabilities that impacted us, only 1.2% were actually known to be exploited. The prior year was 0.4%. Now, the majority of those are in those critical and important vulnerabilities. And there was like a handful in the moderates and lows, like I think three. So if I think about it, like about 1,000 moderates and two of them are exploited, like why are we panicking over the other 998 that are effectively immaterial and not actually being used? Now, little plug for Red Hat here is when we find out that something is being exploited, that kind of raises it to our level of, okay, this is actually an issue. And if we hadn't fixed it already, we're going to fix it. So we'll always proactively do the criticals and the importance, because it could be any one of those that, you know, could be exploited, cause damage. But we're not worrying about all of them, because, I mean, frankly, I actually had this thought the other day, because I hear a lot about these vulnerability scanners, right? And they're very noisy. Sometimes they're not very accurate and they show a lot of things. I want somebody to come out and create a bug scanner. Go tell me all the bugs that are in the software that I have. Like, not the security issues, but the bugs. Because that list is going to be way longer. And I guarantee you that some of those bugs are far more impactful for you as a user than some of these security issues, particularly the low vulnerabilities.
Absolutely. I mean, security properties of a program are essentially an aspect of quality. And looking at them holistically in terms of all quality issues is an interesting view. One of the ways I've described this in the past is security is like this infinite problem space. And if you don't have a way of reasoning over what's actually important, you're going to be chasing down rabbit holes forever in a day. And some of the work that we're actually doing in the security tool belt group within the OpenSSF is around doing these kind of threat modeling and risk assessments to really pick up on, look, okay, in the fullness of time, we should address all the things, but what do I need to address now? And how do I need to address it? Bitsit, with all that said, I think we're going to jump into the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right. Spicy or mild food?
Mild, although my mother likes spicy food, and I think that turned me off as a youngster. I'm starting to get back into handling a little bit of heat.
I'd like to be the Sherpa on your journey.
Thank you.
Text editor of choice, Vim, VS Code, Emacs, or other. That's an option as well.
Vim.
Yes. All right. You know, you slipped on the spicy food. Redeemed yourself on the text editor. This next one is incredibly influential. Tabs or spaces?
I'm a spaces guy.
Yes. All right. We will continue to be good friends, Vincent.
Awesome.
In closing out, thank you so much for all your great advice. But for somebody that's entering our field today, what would you tell them? What sage wisdom would you impart?
Probably two things. One, as you and I are both aware, I've been here for a long time. It's very easy to be burnt out and stressed out and everything else by this work. Not to take anything away from the fantastic firefighters and paramedics and everything else, but it feels a lot like first responder type work. So I say, take care of yourself first. If you don't take care of yourself, you're no good to anybody else. And we're here to be good to other people, right? And then the other part I would say that I think is actually really, really important is for people to stay curious, right? If we think about this XZ backdoor that we just had recently, it was curiosity that found it. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it was. This thing is a little bit weird and I don't understand it, so I'm going to go digging. We have to be curious. I don't really care how you build it. I want to know how you break it, right? And I think that's a very important mindset for security people. So being curious is super important.
That's some great advice. Last but not least, what's your call to action for our audience?
Be open-minded. Find a good, reputable vendor, you know, to enable you on your... I hate the term digital transformation, but your digital transformation journey, right? Find a reputable vendor to work with there and then trust them, right? There's a lot of great software vendors out there, a lot of great open source communities, projects, et cetera, who are desperately doing the right thing for those around them. And I think that that should inspire and has earned trust. And we have to trust the people we work with.
Vincent, thank you so much for being generous with your time. Be safe, and thank you so much for coming on What's in the Sauce.
Thanks, Elkar.
Thank you for listening to What's in the Sauce, an OpenSSF podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our series of conversations on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to keep up to date on the Open Source Security Foundation community, join us online at openssf.org/get involved. We'll talk to you next time on What's in the Sauce.